So this is a three-way interview at the Edinburgh Fringe here at the Bedlam. I saw this show, I think, in the first week, actually. And we've got, I think, the director, the devil, the manager, who's also got other roles as well. So I'll let them introduce themselves. First of all...
Hi, I'm Roxy Kirk. I'm the director.
Hi, I'm Stanton Wright. I'm playing the devil.
I'm Lizzie Bourne, and I play an ensemble manager, and I also helped write the show.
And it's called...
The Glorious Damnation of Eddie Small.
Now, who wants to take this? This is a show that came here, it's had a journey, and I'm quite interested as a theatre maker too, how it's developed and how it's developing.
Well, it's developed quite significantly over quite a short period of time, which has been a really exciting process for all of us. And I think it's enabled us all to have more ownership over the show than we anticipated, which has been it's been a privilege, really. So we started off at the beginning of July with a script that then, from that point to this, has taken a completely different form structurally, although very similar themes have been explored throughout. We've always been interested in the legend of Robert Johnson and how the sound of the deep American South might work in a British setting, and how that might be represented by a British protagonist. We've tried to allow the music to really be the driving force of the story itself, and that has been really, really fun. I'm speaking personally, I'm not a musician by trade, as it were, so I've had to learn a couple of new musical instruments, which has been excellent. I've really enjoyed it, and I've had a lot of support from the rest of the cast, so I'd say it's been a pretty good journey.
Now let's talk to the director here, because I don't think people that watch something like this realise that, I mean, to stage a musical is difficult enough. To stage a play is a challenge in its own right. To put the instruments in the hands of the cast as well, so that you're acting, you're playing, you're storytelling, and you're singing, you know, how do you pull all that off?
Well, I hope we have. It's been a challenge, yeah. I mean, the difficult thing, I guess, is in the rehearsal process, realising that actually doing all the songs and getting all the instruments and vocals done took up a week and a half of 3 weeks. So by the time you've done that, you say, oh God, I've got to do the characters and the scenes and the staging and the dialogue and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's been a tricky one. But, I mean, it's fantastic because the music kind of has brought the story to life. So it's been a good one, but yeah, it has been difficult. And as Lizzie said, it's kind of a mix of actors from different backgrounds as well. So some play lots of instruments, some didn't play any instruments, some had never done musical theatre before, some have only done musical theatre before. So that's also been a challenge, but a fun one.
Well, I mean, I'm going to dive in here. They can so play and they can so sing, and there's no doubt about that. What I'm interested in is, if they didn't have instruments, you'd be directing them to gesture, but they've got their hands on guitars and things like that. So it has to come through the song, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it has to come through acting through song. That's a really good point. And you've also got to get past the whole, the problem of multitasking as well, and understanding that it's hard to play something in a scene and sort of carry out a direction that I've given, because you've got to think about strumming a chord and hitting a harmony and standing in one place, and then in some songs we've also got rotating instruments and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been tough.
So it's not a criticism, it's because art's about tough.
Yeah.
So what's it been like going through tough?
It's been a great learning curve. That's what it's been. Yeah, it's been fun, eye-opening, stressful, tiring, but ultimately a really good learning curve.
And I saw it, and you succeeded. Now I want to ask the devil. I mean, it kind of feels right that the devil should wield a guitar.
Yeah, I know. I kind of think that if we were to do it again, I like the idea of the devil being an incredible guitarist, or completely basically this kind of epiphany of everything that Eddie sees as a perfect bluegrass musician. But the fact of the matter is, I just can't play the guitar as well as well as some other members in the cast. The idea with the devil was that he creates different versions of himself depending on whose soul he's trying to collect. And in this case, Eddie's sort of ideal is a bolo tie wearing, Stetson wearing cowboy, for want of another word, and that's what the devil becomes for him, and Eddie falls in love with him, and therefore seals the deal.
And method acting question, you know, because you do look the part, and you do create the part well. So, is this pure acting, or are you drawing on a bit of your dark side?
Well, the thing is, I'm actually a really nice person.
That's exactly what the devil would say.
Cool, yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Whatever.
No, I'm. Yeah, my casting tends to be the kind of bad people. It's just because of the way I look. But I do. I mean, I can't deny that I love playing an evil person. Who wouldn't? But it's more. I don't know. I always try and just find the kind of charm in the bad people, because the bad people don't know that they're bad people, or they don't think they are anyway. It is hard to be horrible to people, but because I'm quite nice in life, I enjoy it. I enjoy saying
you are really nice.
Thanks.
<in life.
laughs> But because I don't often get the chance to actually to be horrible and be. Yeah. So I can kind of channel that side of me, that evil side of me, which is what acting is about, I suppose.
It's always more fascinating to play a complex evil character, and good people can be sometimes a little one-dimensional in art.
And audiences have really been enjoying this show. And so do you think part of that, I think, is that they know how hard this looks to pull off. So they're also responding to the fact that you do pull it off. And they also, you know, you're sharing with us that you're changing it too. And I think audiences pick up on that. So this kind of had a feel of, you know, it's hard to do it. How on earth are they acting? How on earth are they playing? How on earth are they singing? How are they together so much? You know, and but also you can feel that's a hard thing to do. So, I mean, you've mentioned the stress. Why did you put yourself through this?
I don't know. I think it comes hand in hand with developing a new show. It's part of the enjoyment of it, really. I think audiences have responded to it well. And also, as you say, knowing that it's a developing thing and knowing that, you know, a piece of their feedback might crop up in the show 2 days later. You know, we are still changing things. We sort of reshuffled the ending so that the songs were a bit more spaced out, because we got some feedback about, you know, proportion of dialogue and music. And I think it's nice to feel, as Lizzie said, the whole cast have felt like they've had more ownership over it than they usually would, and I hope that the audiences feel like that too, a little bit.
I don't know who wants to take this one. What, as theatre makers, what are the creative possibilities offered by bluegrass music that you can't as easily get with other genres?
So the thing about bluegrass music is, one, it's about community, because generally when you play bluegrass, you attend some kind of jamming session where everyone generally knows all of the songs, and you pick up your instrument and have a good time. And also, bluegrass has lots of different genres really within it. And in the show, we've tried to replicate that. So we've got a bit of country, a bit of blues, a bit of folk, lots of other things like that. Within all of them, they have the kind of poetical language of the songs. They're all about deep emotions, and the songs were written, a hundred or so years ago, to express sort of heartfelt emotions and things like love and things like repression and stuff like that. And putting it in a show like this means that you really can act through songs successfully. You know, you really can try and portray those emotions, because, I mean, bluegrass musicians are amazing, but they kind of generally, musicians would just sing the songs and play them, whereas we've got the chance here to actually find the real emotion in it and try and communicate that to the audience. And because all of the songs that we've got in the show are original, you know, they were written by our fabulous musical directors, they all have a narrative within them, but they all have that deep-rooted emotion that bluegrass has.
And there are quite a lot of Western movies where, you know, the storyteller, either on camera or off, is, you know, telling the story while playing a guitar. So I guess, you know, you've drawn on a tradition there, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. absolutely.
I've got an absolutely from the writer, and I'm going to come back to the writer now. So I have a friend in Brighton. He's a retired professor of learning called Tom Borner, and he always used to say something to lots of people, and I remember it. He said, never be too proud of your writing. And yet there are one or two shows up here where I think they've tried to make a few changes and the writer threatens court action. But you've been very flexible. But what is that painful or is that lovely?
No, it's definitely lovely. Absolutely not painful. I've written... Previously, the shows that I've written, I've tended to not be nearly so involved as I have been in this one. For example, I've never been in a show that I've written before. And most of the time in the past, I just give my writing over to a creative team and I go, okay, right, I'll see you in previews. Like, I don't really want too much involvement. But this has been a very unique process in that we sort of wrote this particular bit sort of during the rehearsal period, and it's been really helpful to get an influence from the people who are actually playing the roles as I'm writing them, and it's certainly been a, especially while we've been at the Fringe, definite team effort in the rearranging and the development. I like to think of my role in this particular production as less of a writer and more of a facilitator, more of like a developer. I've got an MSc in creative writing and I really enjoyed the opportunity to take an already existing storyline and some already existing characters and just sort of build on them and play with them and rearrange them a bit, and I'm happy to see where things will go in the future, and I do hope to be involved in that process in a collaborative way.
But it just so happened you were in this, but you're a writer and you're a director. What would have happened if you'd have written it, directed it down in London and then just pushed it on its way up to Edinburgh and not been up here?
If I'd not been up here,
well, both of you, I guess, you know, because you are up here, but many shows are up here and the director and the writer are, you know, they left an invoice ages ago.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's completely true. But I guess because we're a young company and because we want to keep on developing it and hearing audience feedbacks, it's kind of, we feel that it is important to be up here with the show. You know, for some of the actors, it's their first Fringe, so we kind of need to be here on a purely logistical level. But in terms of, yeah, being here, making sure that if there need to be changes made, then we're here to help make those changes and not just sort of hand off the load, as it were. But it's been, I mean, it's also just been a lot of fun. You know, I want to come here and I want to see shows and meet people and, you know, talk about our show and not kind of let it go, I guess.
Sorry, I was just going to say, it's also, because I came for my first Fringe, was a decade ago now, and I've come previously as a student, and it's been much more about coming and doing a show for the summer and then going back to my inverted commas real life in September. But this is my life. Like, I'm an actor and a writer now, so it's very important, especially as Roxy said, we're a young company, it's very important for me to be here and be part of it, because I'm not going to just go back to my real life in September. This is my real life and I want to be part of an ongoing process rather than just send something away, see if it works and then be like, oh well, never mind, I'll start again some other time. This is my life. So,
but as an actor, you've had to re-block, you know, rework, redo, but you know, you could have just learned the lines and come up here. I mean, were you, has it surprised you how much this has developed, or were you ready for it?
I think we knew from the get-go that it was new writing and that it was a brand new concept. The idea, well, an actor-musician show is always tough. There's lots of elements, as Roxy was saying, there's lots of elements to get right. But it being new writing as well meant that there was a certain amount of development to be going on. So I think we just kind of accepted it. You just kind of know that that's what it's going to be like. And then we were very lucky that everyone had some amazing ideas and was willing to, you know, throw in their two pence worth. And also that the director and producer and all of the creative team was so accepting of those ideas. Because at the end of the day, we all want to make this story as good as it can be. Because we don't just want to do it at the Fringe and then say goodbye to it. The reason you develop work is because you want something to happen to it. You want, ideally, you know, in a few years' time, someone else will pick up this play and do another version of it or something, you know. So for us, the Fringe as well is just a medium to sort of use our creative skills and try out different storylines, try out different character work and kind of see what kind of beast it turns into, really.
Two final questions. first director and writer, what do you love about it?
The show specifically. I love the ensemble feel. I love the music. I love the story. I'm just going to say I love all of it. I love the show that we've created. I think what Stanton says is important. I love that we've all come together to create something that we all feel really passionate about and all are sort of prepared to keep on working on as long as it takes to make the best it can be, and that it's not just a one-off thing. So I think that's been the most valuable thing for me.
There's a lot of love there. Writer, what do you love about it right now?
Right now? Yeah. I love the discovery right now, because the story has gone through so many different forms, even before I sort of was on board in a writing capacity. And just to find out from audiences something that you intended isn't working or something you didn't intend is working is fascinating and really important.
Now, knowing, of course, that the devil is in the small print, and Fringe Review isn't into pitches, but we're really into invites and invitations. I'm going to end this interview by asking the devil to invite the potential audience to come and see this musical. So here's the deal. If they come, what are you offering them?
So the deal is, if you come see our show, you will walk away feeling like you've had one hell of a good time, and that the music has penetrated your soul. But there will be a few strings attached.
Not least the ticket price, but come and see,
what's it called?
The Glorious Damnation of Eddie Small.
Come and see.
Happening at the Bedlam Fringe. So all of you, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.